Hey man, you already in Dubai?
Not yet. I'll be there tomorrow
Scott.
night. Be there tomorrow night. Yeah.
Oh, Tuesday. Today's
I'm
Monday.
only
My bad.
coming to see you. You've been asking
You know, because
publicly over
you've
and over
said
and over
that.
again, and here I am.
You've said that to me so many times in
The
the
last
past.
time I was supposed to
Did
be
you
a
know
long
I?
layover that didn't happen. Oh,
Yeah, I'll never forget that. I was meant to do a show with Elon and Bolsonaro 2 days ago.
and what happened? I thought that was happening.
The strike in Israel 4 hours beforehand reminds me of when I did Imran Khan, when I interviewed Imran Khan the same time the mutiny started. And now I'm interviewing Bolsonaro, which a lot of people compare to Imran Khan and Trump. And Iran strikes Israel. And the market's dumped. Were you surprised by that dump or was that expected? So is that what Bitcoin's still seen as a risk asset?
I mean, the Bitcoin market, I guess, dumped a bit this weekend. I think you could argue that it was already that price action was somewhat baked in. And then yesterday, stocks opened with futures up, right? Gold's obviously been raging a bit, but listen, I don't think that it had much to do with the conflict. I think at this point, and I'm not speaking obviously from a humanitarian perspective, but markets have shrugged off the Ukraine-Russia war. I just think
Yeah,
markets
but
don't really care about conflicts that much. I don't really think that was the reason.
just it depends. It depends on the conflict. I think when Iran attacked Israel, initially no one knew how significant it was, and then later we started getting a bit more clarity that wasn't as significant as people feared, and it wasn't a full-blown war between the two countries. But initially, obviously equities were not open and the markets were closed. But crypto's 24/7, so crypto reacted what dropped by 8%, 7%. I can't remember, 12%. It was a big number. Correct me again if I get my numbers wrong, because
Yeah, I
I'm
mean,
doing
Bitcoin
some
dropped.
short term.
Obviously, what gave me a little more pause was how much altcoins dropped this time. Bitcoin dominance
Yeah,
hit basically
but
a
bit.
3-year high. So there was definitely like something to pay attention to in that regard. We've seen a lot of rangy, choppy Bitcoin price action without altcoins getting so utterly destroyed, at least for a day. This time, they definitely felt a lot more pain than I think we've seen in some of these past moves. But no, like I
Yeah,
don't, like I
but
said,
just.
I mean, at the end of the day, Bitcoin just visited the low of a range. And when you're ranging, you go to the lows and people panic. You go to the highs, people get euphoric and they get wrecked both ways and you just keep on ranging. And so it's basically just
But
between
how
60
did
and
the
74. Didn't break it.
yeah but your thoughts on Bitcoin dropping significantly when the attack happened, it pretty much instantly. I remember I was covering it live when someone came to me, was like, Mario, crypto just crashed. Obviously they over exaggerated, and by the same time gold was a good hedge.
Yeah, but
So is
gold
that
was pretty crazy yesterday, obviously Sunday. I think Bitcoin kind of crashed on Saturday and gold made its bigger moves on Sunday, if I was watching correctly. And gold, had this huge move to the upside. $100 day on gold is pretty big volatility. And, almost to 2,500, I think like 2,470. And the lows of that day were 2,370 when people unpanicked, right? And decided, oh, maybe this isn't such a big deal. It's that you get this crazy knee-jerk reaction. And then things generally revert to the mean. I see William has his hand up. If you go ahead and comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the way I look at it is the following. Bitcoin is three things, depending on who you ask. For some people, it's a financial asset that you can hold forever. For others, it's a form of money to be used. And for the third group, it's just an instrument to trade and to follow momentum or volatility. So what happened on the weekend showed us that the traders had the upper hand because they swayed the market lower. Now, to be fair, we don't know how the crypto would have fared against the traditional markets because they were closed on the weekend. It would have been more insightful to have a more level playing field comparison if both markets were open at the same time. Obviously, the gold ticked up a little bit because people would think that some people would think that gold is a safe haven. And that's really what happened. Now, back to the trading range, as you said, Scott, it is now, it's a trading range it's in. Going back to 62 is not a correction. It's testing another support level. A correction would have been hitting low 50s if that is the case. And on the high side, it tested it three times, 70, 72, three times it couldn't pierce it. So we are in that range right now.
Yeah, that's how I view it. Chris, I assume you view it similarly.
And just quickly, yeah. Scott, you were talking before going to Chris and the other panelists. You talked about how altcoins got hit hard this time around and Bitcoin dominance spiked. How would you interpret that? Why do you think this time around alts took a bigger hit than usual?
Well, I mean, I can't give any sure answers, but the amount of froth that I've been talking about for a month in this market since we talked, when everybody told me I was nuts because we were going straight to 100,000 and the euphoria was kicking. When you see the meme coin casino going as insane as it was, while everything is overbought and charts are showing bearish divergences, you know, this is one of those times that the excess is going to get flushed out of this market. And we saw, you know, I think, I don't know the numbers, hundreds of millions, if not over a billion across the board flushed out of the market. When the casino goes that nuts, to me, it's a great signal that you're about to see that happen. I think that there's a lot of people who made a lot of money on altcoins in the past month. And the minute they saw a sign to get out before they feared those would turn to losses, they did. And that's my view. And also, you know, we have a more stable, and also I think we have a more stable floor on Bitcoin now with the ETFs. Obviously, there's this sort of increasing demand that keeps that floor there. So a lot of people, I think, are just more inclined to sell their altcoins when things look a little dicey than they are their Bitcoin. And also, we know that demand for Bitcoin that's going through the ETFs is not trickling down into the rest of the market. So the rest of the market is sort of its own thing happening with the crypto degens, and they just react differently.
And in terms of so first on the altcoin side, is, you know, the grand scheme of things for the correction, it doesn't mean much. What are your thoughts on ETH outperforming Bitcoin today?
I think it's just noise. You know, I can't describe any particular significance, because every time we have ascribed significance to ETH outperforming Bitcoin, it reverts down and continues lower. So
I think, Mario, this was a correction. It was a correction because it dipped down to 2,800 and it forced some liquidations automatically. I read 130 million at least. So this was a correction of that forced liquidation.
Let's go to the other speakers. And one thing, Scott, Travis, Paul, but one thing, Scott, I want to ask you and Matt afterwards is kind of the ETF. Do you think ETF outflows could continue, you know, could speed up if there's more fear in the markets? Like, how quickly would ETF outflows react to any FUD, to any fear? But, let's go to the other points first. Travis, Paul?
Just to echo on a couple things that Scott said. Yeah, I mean, I would say that Bitcoin actually traded really well through that. I mean, you're talking about like a 13% pullback, mostly on the weekend, mostly when U.S. markets were closed. And that's just not that. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I mean, I would say that trades pretty well. People are, sometimes you've got Bitcoin naysayers that like to kind of poke it at Bitcoin where it's like, oh, if it's a safe haven, like, why didn't it trade better? And I think that's just kind of ridiculous in a situation like that. But the knee jerk reaction in, you know, a potential conflict event like that would be Bitcoin higher. It's just not, I don't know whose expectation, who would have that expectation. That's just not how it's going to trade. And you shouldn't expect it to trade like that. With the alts, you did just hit, you know, quite an air pocket there. And I think that with the Bitcoin ETFs, Bitcoin has kind of been in a world on its own within crypto for a while. It doesn't really have any competitors within the crypto ecosystem. It's kind of competing against, like, you know, gold or treasuries in a way. But the TAM on those two assets is so much massively larger that it's just, you know, it's a much, much smaller, but it doesn't really have any competitors within crypto, I don't think. And now with the ETFs, like, it's never been more of an asset on its own in crypto. That makes it even more so. Different flows. A lot of those flows are structural. I see Matt's up here. I'm sure Matt can talk to that more. But you just hit air pockets on alts. And I think that with the way alts have been acting lately, people just don't really have conviction in very many of these names. There's just a lot of bag holders. You know, I don't know. It's like the ratio of bag holding to conviction is probably quite high right now, where people don't really believe in what they own. They're just owning it for momentum. They're owning it for the meme, like literally for a meme. And or they're just owning it maybe for some kind of points airdrop daisy chain thing. And I think that that does kind of change the downside behavior for a lot of this stuff as well, too, because, like, you know, you just pick a random alt that's run really hard over the last 3 to 6 months, and a lot of these names could pull back 75% and people still wouldn't have conviction in them other than maybe for a bounce trade. There's just not conviction in the underlying fundamentals or the large majority of these names.
Yeah, I agree completely. When it goes, when people are flipping meme coins that die in 12 hours, right? Knowing that they're playing a game of hot potato, that sort of mentality, I think, spreads across the entire market, to Travis's point. Go ahead, Mario. Sorry.
No, I was going to go to the upside to get an update on the most important thing still to this day in crypto.
Yeah, it's great to be on. I do think it's...
Matt, you there? Can you hear him, Scott? I think I can't hear him. I think he's having the glitch.
I hear him,
I can hear him.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yours. Scott, I'll let you take over. I can't hear him.
Great. Glad you can hear me, most of you. I think they continue to be the most important thing in the market. And I don't read much into the sort of weekend sell-off and bounce or the weakness in altcoins. I think it's exactly as you guys have described. I think things are still shaping up fairly well for the Bitcoin ETFs. You know, we're continuing to make progress on national account platforms. Maybe some of that has pushed out into Q3, but it's looking pretty good. We have the developments in Hong Kong showing it's a global market for ETFs growing increasingly. And, you know, at least at Bitwise, we continue to see strong demand. I think we had something like 80 million in flows last week. So I think all is well on Bitcoin ETFs. I think the market's going to be excited going into the halving. I think it'll be excited post-halving. I just think we're chopping sideways in a channel on Bitcoin, and that will continue for a little bit until we get these national account approvals and get enough demand to push us through to new highs. So yeah, the word from Bitcoin land or Bitcoin ETF land is still positive.
Matt, what do you think about the approval today, although they're not trading yet, of the Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs in Hong Kong?
Yeah, I'm sort of split between the Eric Balchunas take, which is it's no big deal, Eric being the Bloomberg ETF analyst, and some of the crypto native takes that it's, you know, a giant deal. The Hong Kong market is relatively small, but it is a sort of outlet for onshore wealth into Bitcoin. And for that reason, I suspect, you know, this will be a positive. I don't think it's a game changer. I don't think it's akin to the US ETF market, but I take, you know, Eric's calling for 500 million flows. I take the over on that. So I think it's a positive. Look, you know, we're in ETF era globally for Bitcoin. It's going to be available everywhere. You're going to be able to trade it across markets. That's going to create a virtuous circle of liquidity, which is a net good. So it's not a game changer, but it is a net positive.
I assume that on how level of a game changer it would be. Just want to give people some numbers. I mean, I would agree it's pretty small of a market. You know, GDP over in Hong Kong is only about a little less than 400 billion. In comparison, people might have forgotten that we've actually had ETFs outside of the US approved as far back as 2021, Canada, Brazil, Australia, amounting to about over 5.5 trillion in GDP. And that barely moved the market at that time. So I don't think this Hong Kong ETF is going to make too significant of a move outside of just newsworthiness. And that's about it.
Yeah, I think that's right. The only tweak to that is it's nice to get, you know, more ETF options available during Asian trading hours, which is sort of an air pocket that we've had. So that's a nice positive that sort of contributes to 24/7 ETF liquidity around the world. But I think that's right in terms of a matter order of magnitude.
I think Australia is close enough to Asia hours where we at least had that with about, what is that, 1.6 trillion of GDP available in ETFs as far back as 2021. But every little bit helps.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that people are trying to extrapolate the fact that spot Bitcoin volumes are huge in Asia versus the United States and translate that to ETFs. But I think you have sort of those opposing forces. I think the people in Asia who are buying and trading Bitcoin want to buy and trade physical Bitcoin, right? And the ETF is kind of a more foreign and unfamiliar product to them. And they might actually want a product that's less surveilled or on the radar of China. So, you know, I think that it'll be somewhere in the middle, but I think it's a net positive regardless. I don't think anybody can look at the Hong Kong approvals and say there's a bad thing. And obviously there's the nuance that Ethereum is being approved as well. Go ahead, Joa.
Yep. Yeah, I feel like there's something that doesn't, we talk about the ETF a lot and about how much that could come in, but we don't talk about like Rune and DeFi on Bitcoin, which I think could actually be, if you look at what happened with Ordinals and what happened to other NFTs when Ordinals happened, which became the largest, the most expensive. If you look at the total of NFTs, it's the largest market, and it just kind of sucked up liquidity from Ethereum and Solana. I expect when DeFi is launched, which is launching in a few days, the same thing's going to happen. Like at the end of the day, no matter how much you believe in ETH, you're still a fan of Bitcoin. And I feel like everyone would still rather be on the Bitcoin chain. And if it works out the way people think it's going to work out, I think almost just as much inflow is going to come from that as this, as the ETF, to be honest. I'm curious what you think.
I throw that one to the panel. Joe, you probably
highly agree. I've been a big fan of DeFi, and easily a ton of the market cap of locked liquidity on Ethereum is from just simply wrapped Bitcoin. And the user experience of having to go from Bitcoin to any of the Ethereum chains, and especially having to go to the L2s, that UX is absolutely horrendous. I just came out of a conference where that was the biggest, like 1 to 4 hour debate is the user experience of these L2s on Ethereum. And to be able to have a more seamless experience of Bitcoin and DeFi, I think it would be a game changer. I think a lot of people are looking forward to it. And it would ironically potentially impact the business model of wrapped Bitcoin. But we'll see how that turns out,
but Joe,
and whether or not these products are able to execute.
Guys, Joe, Paul, the Ordinals have kind of slowed down recently, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, all NFTs have, but I'm talking about the liquidity drain that Ordinals had, where a lot of large NFT collections, you see the price came down, never went back up. A lot of that money went into Ordinals. And you, when you just look at the total amount on Ordinals, it dwarfs what was on other chains. It just sucked up all the liquidity. And I'm wondering that if that's not going to happen on Bitcoin when DeFi launches, if it's not going to suck up a lot of the TVL that's on these other chains now, and if that can't be just as big as the as what's happened with the ETF. And I think it is. I think it's going to be tit for tat, to be honest.
There's two kind of NFTs that I think exist in the market. Ordinals kind of took over one style of NFT, one that, of course, at high value, Louis Vuitton, and just by virtue of putting it on Bitcoin, you've made a signal to the market that you believe this thing has value. And that attracted a certain type of NFT trader, creator, and whatnot. And the other chains, think Solana, is which you can mint NFTs, hundreds, if not thousands of NFTs for dirt cheap, attracts a different use case entirely. Bitcoin has not been able to tap into that use case. It's still there. It's still valuable. But without these layer twos and the EVMs or some type of scalability that allows for these larger scale amount of minting actions, it won't be able to tap into that. And this is what it's really opening up in its ability to take a lot of that liquidity away from the other markets, pending, of course, that they're able to be successful with both marketing and achieving adoption where you don't have too much fragmentation across the L2s. Like, let there be one or two chains that are quite successful in the L2 market. If that's so, then I think it can be quite successful in extracting this NFT liquidity.
Well, I don't even think it's just the NFT liquidity. I just mean the DeFi that happens now, like the yield farming that happens, how much TVL it's going to lock up. I'm using the NFT as a benchmark, like Ordinals. You're right in your use case, but I'm looking at how much Ordinals sucked in liquidity from other chains, and what's that mean? What's that going to do if that happens now with DeFi?
No disagreement there. No question about it. DeFi is heavily used on Ethereum and other L2s through through Wrapped Bitcoin, that being just a huge part of the liquidity. I know I've personally used it, many people I know. And so you can see it just by the numbers, which I can look up, but it'll suck up a ton, no question about it.
I want to go back to the altcoin market. Joe, if you can give us an update there. We were talking earlier before you jumped on. Scott was talking about how alts got hammered harder than usual along with Bitcoin a couple of days ago. And Bitcoin dominance kind of spiked. So maybe get your thoughts on that and whether that means anything in the long term.
Yeah, no, it's good discussion. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Joe, I said Joe or Joe. Joe is yours.
Okay. Yeah, it's good discussion. I mean, the Bitcoin, like as far as what we saw socially on Saturday, it was a blip. We didn't even see an increase, a very small increase in the number of posts receiving interactions across TikTok, Reddit, X, and YouTube. So really a blip. And at the end of the day, like I agree with Travis, there's, you know, Bitcoin is going to have these movements. And yes, you know, if there's a 15-minute period of, you know, potential imminent nuclear war, and there's not going to be power at the end of the day, that has to get priced in for like a second where, you know, Bitcoin could go down. But at the end of the day, it's along with everything else. With alts, yeah, I mean, these things are, you know, they're kind of like the call option on the rest of the market, right? And, you know, what you're going to see, you know, the put option go down when you're seeing volatility in Bitcoin. You know, at the end of the day, these are still very speculative, right? And, you know, but people are going to trade these. Like, you know, we talked about before, something like EOS, for example, you know, they have 140,000 Bitcoin on at their foundation, which is equivalent to like the 13th largest like university endowment fund like in the world. And really, it's kind of like, you know, a phantom and ghost chain that's out there, but they will live, like they will exist longer than, you know, most of the people running businesses here. So that's where it gets kind of crazy, where it's like people are just betting on that speculation side of everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, like these things will still be around, even with the limited amount of building that's happening.
By the way, just Joe, talking about Bitcoin, it's part of the news for the day. Volume, that's by DWF, put out a report or a tweet. Volume on ordinals have increased exponentially with Bitcoin halving and Runes protocol launch coming in April. The most prominent NFTs are Node Monks, Bitcoin. But by the way, just Joe, I know I seem clueless, but my team is all in on ordinals. We're invested in a whole bunch of projects in that ecosystem, and they're even investing in ordinals NFTs as well. But they're the ones that told me it's kind of been slowing down recently. But let me just continue reading what DWF put out. The most prominent NFTs are Node Monks, Bitcoin Puppets, and Quantum Cats XYZ. Disclaimer, I have no idea if we're invested in any of these. Some of these airdrops have been of pretty high value. We expect many protocols to launch or migrate to Runes. Kind of making your point there, Joa. Any other thoughts from the panel on the Bitcoin ecosystem, especially with the Runes launching very soon? Anyone at all? Actually, Matt, I'm going to go to you on this one.
Yeah, I've got a lot on this too.
Yeah, and I'm going to, Matt, just to prepare you, I want to go to you as well. Does TradFi even give a shit about this? Or is it just for us, DGen? But Matt, Joe, I'll let you comment on it first, and then we'll go to Matt on whether TradFi cares.
Well, they should care a little bit, you know, as far as the miners go, because we will see when Runes launches here, you know, probably the most clogged Bitcoin chain that we've ever seen, higher than when Ordinals had launched. So I think a lot of people are preparing for that and what that is going to look like. We've already seen a lot of action here with like quote pre-runes, where people are launching ordinals that are attached to a rune token standard. And for people that don't know, runes is just a new token standard on Bitcoin, similar to what BRC20 was, but a much more evolved and better you know, standard. Casey Rodemar, follow him at Rodemar on X, wrote the ordinal standard, and now he wrote this new rune standard. And so the kind of building on Bitcoin ecosystem is about as hyped as I've ever seen it.
Matt?
Yeah, I would say that TradFi doesn't know or doesn't.
Oh, shit, I can't hear Matt. Okay, so hold on, Matt, before you speak.
He's going.
Yeah, I know. You can all hear him.
I can hear him.
Scott, you're back. Matt, I can't hear him, so he's speaking. So the mic is yours, Scott, to go back and forth on that. We're just still talking about the Bitcoin ecosystem, whether TradFi cares.
I was just saying, no, TradFi doesn't care yet. I haven't seen any writing from any sort of sell side analysts. We're starting to write about this. We'll be hosting our own spaces on it. But we speak to a specific angle of the TradFi community, and I think we're the only people doing anything on this topic. So the narrative is just too complex, I think, for TradFi to get its head around. It has a simpler view. I agree they should care. And maybe you'll start to see people writing about it, but until you see, you know, us, AllianceBernstein, and other folks writing on it, then TradFi hasn't woken up to it, even on the edges.
It's also positive for TradFi. And so I think they don't really need to care right now. It's a positive for miners. It's a positive for the ecosystem. I think had this been a negative thing, you know, maybe there's something they would look at a little bit more closely, but it's positive all in all.
Perfect. Yeah, Scott, you're back. Joe, I had one more question for you, and Matt, hopefully Scott could hear you. Matt, I'll let you respond. Perfect. I have a question for Joe after Matt responds because I cannot hear Matt, Scott. But the question I have for you, Joe, is that any specific narratives, is it still the same three narratives, RWAs, AI, and gaming, or is it changing a bit in the markets? But Matt, go ahead.
No, I agree with that. TradFi doesn't need to care. They also, you know, they have a very long time horizon. They'll catch up, but there's nothing about this that's going to sort of alter the drip into ETFs, which remains the story for TradFi right now.
Yeah, I could transition a little bit to RWAs, AI, and GameFi. You know, if you look at just over the weekend in the market and that little blip, everything recovered in unison and coordinated to those asset classes. And so, yes, a lot of people are sticking to those narratives. I think they really want to see some sort of killer app come out of either AI or RWA. I think you probably have a little bit of a better chance at real world assets hosting that and being part of the killer app that more people are utilizing, whether that's, you know, owning gold and having an access to, you know, an NFT that gives you access to that gold or securitizing that. Because at the end of the day, RWAs was just like a fancy word that crypto gave to security tokens. But I think that that's actually like the best case, like partial ownership of a Camaro, right? Or something that's out there where, you know, people are living, you know, more and more into homes where they're splitting, you know, if you live in Newport Beach here, you know, 6-8 people are owning a beach house. And how do you do that a little bit better? And how do you sell that off and, you know, not have to do a bunch of paperwork? And I think that there's something probably there. But, you know, we'll see. I see Gary in the audience here. He's selling his $600 million home. Maybe he wants to securitize that into 8 pieces.
Joe, just one more question I have for you is the Base ecosystem seems to be doing really well. And it seems someone told me NFTs on Base are doing well. I know that meme coins have been dominating, and Brett, which is the leading meme coin on there, has been doing well. But what else on Brett is gaining traction? Also, talking about meme coins, also it's just funny. Linear, we haven't talked enough about Linear. We should probably do a show on that. That's the new Linear's in
Foxy.
Yeah. Oh, you know about Foxy? Oh shit. Yeah. So Foxy launched on Linear. They're the biggest meme coin on Linear. They launched at a, so me and Scott, I don't know if you're involved in it, Scott, but we're invested, but it's Foxy launched at a what? FTV of 130 million. I thought it was more. I thought it was a lot more. Anyway, FTV 130 million and market cap 40 million. That's on Linear, which is a pretty interesting ecosystem. I think we're invested in a few projects on there.
But it's trading on at least Bybit, I think OKX. So it's you call it a meme coin, but it launched on a bunch of centralized exchanges as well.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Qcoin, Bybit, BitGet. I think it's BitGet as well, but Bybit, Qcoin, and OKX.
I'm just looking at the chart.
Also, yes. Yeah, so George, my question though is not about Linear. I'm not sure if you can comment on Linear, but more about Base.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Base chain, Coinbase, I think they reported like $20 million in revenue for Base in March, you know, up, you know, from $5 million. So I think it's right now seems kind of inconsequential to their overall earnings with what's going on, you know, but you are seeing, you know, with, I think their actual earnings are like more in like the $400 to $500 million in that same quarter. But I think the interesting part is, you know, the overall market that's out there and the coins that are being launched here, you are seeing tons of activity. Now, you know, what this actually ends up meaning for the market, you know, I don't know if Coinbase ends up saying, hey, we are going to, you know, I would love if one day they said, hey, we're going to launch a token and it's going to be, you know, we're going to delist from the stock exchange and it's just going to be a token on our exchange and Base could be part of that. That would be epic. I don't think that's going to happen. But they're, you know, they are playing in this DeFi space. But the tough part with this, to play devil's advocate a little bit, is, you know, we saw this with FTX when everyone was like, oh, everything's going decentralized. It's going to happen no matter what. Like, that's where a lot of people went after. You saw all the major centralized exchanges launching these DEXs. DEX volume still is 1/10 of centralized exchange volume here. And so some people might call this actually somewhat of a distraction for Coinbase, and we have enough L1s already.
Yeah, really. Okay. Go ahead, William.
Yeah, two thoughts. Just quickly on the Bitcoin. I think, Scott, you mentioned it this morning, the announcement or pre-announcement from...
William, it's a bit hard to hear you, buddy. I don't know. Your mic changed. Did you change something?
I'm trying a new one, but how about now? Is this better?
It's the same. Just go ahead. It's the same. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll switch it after. You mentioned that Tether has a new pre-announcement about tokenization. I think that's going to be significant whenever that happens. It's kind of a bit too similar to what BlackRock did, but imagine it, I would say, at least 10 times in scope, potentially. Back to the Base, because I'm very close to the Base ecosystem. I spend a lot of time on Farcaster. Right now, Base has more than $5 billion in value locked on Base. And it's really being driven by a lot of the Web3 activity. And I know I can't not stop talking about meme coins. You talk about DGEN. DGEN is no longer a meme coin. It's one of those that has transitioned from a meme coin to being a real spend and earn Web3 coin, almost like Steemit, but much better. So keep an eye on those coins that evolve from having started as a meme coin, but being really in the hands of many users that are using them in the apps.
I'm bringing Vinny up. I'm not sure if he can hear, but he's requesting, so I'm assuming he has a comment on this when he does appear. Vinny, are you, I'm showing you as connecting, so we can, I guess, continue on from there. I do want to circle back. Vinny, I see you're up now. Did you have a comment? Because you requested, so I'm assuming you got something to say here.
Oh no, I just joined now, so I don't know what you guys are chatting about, but
okay. Sorry, I just wasted everyone's time for like 60 seconds, man. It's your fault. I'm just kidding.
No, I'm sorry. I got chewed out on Friday by everyone. I think Friday, Thursday spaces where I was like doom and glooming, and then I posted on Friday that like Bitcoin had to hold 60K over the weekend, and everyone was laughing until Thursday until Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I've been getting it all month since daring to say negative things about the meme coin casino being a signal that we might chill for a while, and that could be the highs for a while. I mean, it kind of brings us back to the market. Chris, what are you looking at? I know, you know, I said kind of earlier, now it looks like we've established a range pretty much 60-ish to 74-ish, and people tend to panic and think it's all over when you hit the bottom of a range, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's the same thing I've been talking about for, geez, I guess for a month now. You know, we're range bound. Our last, the market structure coming off, if you're looking at the weekly, if you're looking at macro market structure coming off the 2022 bear market swing low, the last higher low is right there around that 59,000 area, depending on what chart you're looking at, 59.2, right around there. So we're sitting between there and the all-time high. And we've done nothing but range, and every, you know, everybody getting, you know, wired and freaked out about it. And, you know, I've talked about a few different potential scenarios as we looked in here. I've mentioned triangles, but said, you know, really, I wasn't all that. I didn't think we'd really have triangles here. The way I'm looking at it now in terms of Elliott wave is a flat correction. And so that basically is three waves down off the all time high, three waves back up. Recovering at least 90% of that drop, which we've got, and then five waves down, which may or may not be complete here. I think if we lose this 62,500 area, I think we sweep that 59 low, but I think it may be short-lived, just a like a wick down there, maybe into like, I don't know, maybe about 57,000 or so. And then I look for the move up. If we don't lose that though, and instead we break out above this morning swing high, which is right there around 66, 860 or so, 870. If we can break out above that instead, then that suggests the bottom is probably in. And then we need to see a breakout above the 72,800 area. And if we do that, then it's all time highs incoming. You know, at least that's what I'm looking at right now. So, you know, I think people misunderstand when you said earlier about, you know, the drop this weekend and what was going on with that whole Iran-Israel thing. What I think what Scott was trying to say here, guys, basically is that the chart was suggesting that it was already headed down anyway. That's what he's trying to say.
Yes, the range lows were in play, whether it was going to be Saturday or Monday.
Right, right. Exactly. And so, you know, the way we look at the markets isn't that, okay, well, you know, we know that there's going to be some, you know, Iran sending all these drones over to Israel or something like that. But we look at this, we go, well, here's what's going on with the structure. It's likely to pull back further. And that was already in progress. And that was, I think, maybe what Scott didn't make so clear what he was trying to say this morning.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. I completely agree with that. Anybody that's been following me for any length of time, you know, that's what we talk about. You know, we say the news is in the charts. It doesn't mean we know what's going to happen, you know, what exact news event's going to happen, but just that the chart's already set up, the direction is set for the trend. And, you know, you'll get a knee-jerk reaction to news events, but generally speaking, the trend's already in progress. So for me, again, even as of this weekend, we still haven't even broke 59. So it's not even a pullback. It's just sideways.
Chop, chop. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to ask Christopher, but doesn't it feel like people are waiting to see what Israel's reaction is to this? Because as soon as Blinken started talking, we saw a retraction. Yeah, I know the chart was pointing we were going to go down. Of course, people overreacted because of the news. I think the news did play a factor. And now I think people are like, oh, I'm going to buy it cheap. And it jumped up. But now, like, smart money is kind of waiting to see, like, what is Israel's reaction actually going to be? Or am I just being too cautious here?
Well, I want to hear who's – okay, I can't hear Christopher, but since we're talking about the
– Yes, let Chris jump in, though, because he asked him a specific question. Then we'll,
yeah, I know. I interrupted him on purpose so I can actually bring them down and back up. Well, I know it's selfish for me from the audience, but I really want to hear that back and forth.
I got it.
Christopher's back up now, so it was only a few seconds wait. Go ahead, Christopher. Sorry, now hopefully I can hear you. Okay.
Yeah, no. Yeah, all I was going to say was the way that I look at charts is this just this understanding that basically what we talk about, the smart money and whatnot, it's not that they tell the market what to do. They're testing the market. Okay. And so it's not that some whale out there or whatever pushes price, you know, these wherever they want it. They can nudge price around. But at the end of the day, it's what is the market feeling? And so what you're getting often when you get the rallies up and the pullbacks are tests of the market's resolve at that point. And so in response to your question there, I don't know so much that it's smart money waiting for the response. What they're more so it's the smart money is testing the market participants to see what the market is feeling. If the market is really bearish and whatnot, then it'll just take a little push by those smart money to kind of, and then the market will jump in and follow through lower. But if the market is bullish, for instance, and smart money tries to push it a little bit down, what's going to happen is the market itself is going to eat up that push, and then they're just going to keep on going up. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessary that the smart money really is waiting for whatever's going on with there as much as it's testing the market itself to see, is the market bullish from here, or is the market still got some fear in it and it wants to fall a bit lower?
To me, it just seems like most assets are telling you that this just wasn't that big of a deal. And I don't mean to make light of conflict at all, but just as it relates to markets, I mean, and it was, Mario, I listened to your space for a couple of hours when you had, it's always funny to me. I mean, you know, funny kind of in a weird way, but like to be in this space and it's like me and you and Scott and Matt from Bitwise. And then I go into one of your political ones and it's like Alex Jones and Andrew Tate. Like there's just something funny about that. But it was telegraphed by Iran's response was telegraphed. People knew it was coming if you're paying attention. They responded in a way that was very contained and not particularly destructive. And then the United States has a tight enough leash on Israel that they're not going to let Israel basically escalate it from there and more or less let this die on the vine. And it seems like the market is saying that that is the base case. There's obviously tail risks to that. And the market's going to figure out, you know, kind of how it wants to price those tail risks of something other than that happening. But it's like, that's the base case. And so you have, you know, stocks flat, gold up small, VIX essentially flat, dollar essentially flat, yields a little higher, crude down a little bit. Like, it's, you know, that's that the market is telling you how serious of a deal it was.
I think I appreciate what you said. Like, I think the markets is one of the smartest indicators there is for anything, really, because you got some of the smartest people betting their own money on what they think, you know, will happen next, including some people with insider information, more information than most of us here. So I'm glad you're kind of focusing on that, and I probably should. I'm going to mention it now because we're going to cover obviously Israel's response, which is expected today. You know, Blinken, I think, just said we're streaming it live. He said they expect Israel's response in the next 24 to 48 hours, and that was about half an hour ago. Now, why is this important? I think this is one of the few black swan events that could, change the entire sentiment in crypto. I think if the Israel's response was like, you know, as extreme as wiping out Iran's nuclear capabilities, which is a possibility, even though I'm on Travis's boat here, I think it's highly unlikely. It is a possibility. There's a lot of people kind of calling for that. Israel's been you know, warning about Iran's nuclear capabilities for a while. And then it goes back to a question, why did Israel, you know, a lot of people said Israel knew Iran would respond very aggressively if they hit the consulate and killed the general, yet they did it anyway. So was Israel trying to bait Iran, or is Iran ready to escalate just for political purposes? There's just too many factors in place. And I've had a lot of diplomats that speak to me behind the scenes that don't want to come on the show. I think no one's sure. Is the US's leash around Israel's neck, is that enough to stop Israel from escalating? Is it even needed? I don't know, but I do know that it is extremely, it's one of the few geopolitical things I'm happy to talk about on these spaces, because it will play a role. It will impact inflation. I think we had an analyst come on stage, might have heard him, Travis, talking about how this will impact the shipping lanes as well, and trade around the world. That will impact inflation, that will impact the Fed's decision, and that obviously impacts everything else. So it's just too many factors that will be impacted by an Iran-Israel conflict. And just remember, like, the markets were reacting to any escalation with Hezbollah, which kind of the next step was for a regional conflict. The next step was Israel versus Hezbollah. But if we skip that and go directly, which we did, now there's Iran attacking Israel directly. We kind of skipped the whole Hezbollah narrative. It just shows that thing kind of, it is still a very serious matter. But I tend to be an optimist, so I don't think it will escalate too much. Israel will respond. They will strike Iran, but it will be a limited strike. But then again, how will Iran respond as well? So we'll see.
Well, part of to me what makes it confusing, and also may make it difficult for people that maybe have more insider information. You know, you had a couple like retired colonels that were in that space, and you know, I think there was a former CIA guy in there. And obviously, when you have folks like that with clearances or used to have clearances like that, and they get into a space that has 60,000 people in it, then you got to kind of wonder, like, what are they saying? Why are they saying it? What can they say? To what end are they doing this right now? And you combine that with the fact that all of these conflicts are proxies, or they're like proxies on proxies. And you're seeing that in most of the major conflicts around the world right now. And the nations that are actually at the front lines are just representatives or puppets of larger, more powerful nations. That's a sad thing. It's pretty dark, right? But that is the state of things. And it makes it even kind of more difficult to try and ascertain how some of this stuff is going to go, because it's like Israel isn't going to retaliate because the U.S. doesn't want them to escalate this situation, unless for some sort of like backroom geopolitical reason, the United States actually does want to ratchet this up right now. For example, maybe an election in November, and for strategic reasons, it's deemed a good idea that they want to ratchet up the intensity of this conflict right now. And then the United States says, okay, Israel, actually, you are going to go now. And so you have to try and like step into all these like weird kind of proxy stuff. And yeah.
But how do you, Scott?
I hate to interrupt, but you guys.
Yeah, Scott, how do you? I'm going to help you. Scott, I was going to do the pivot for you. Don't worry. I was just about to ask you a question, Scott. If this escalates, how do you think that impacts crypto? Like, when does it matter, in your opinion?
I don't. Why would it matter? I don't.
I'll
have knee jerk reactions like Saturday, but like, what happened with Ukraine? Right. I mean, I don't see why. I just don't. First of all, to Travis's point, the whole thing seems like scripted and telegraphed. It's like, hey guys, are you free on Tuesday at 4 p.m. for us to bomb? Like, will you be ready? I mean, I'm not trying to make light of the situation, but come on. Right. It's very clear that neither of them, they're both, need to show that they're strong without doing anything that actually gets a lot of people killed, in my opinion. So that's my outside zero knowledge, zero expert, and I have no business talking about it take. But as for what it will do to the market, first of all, geopolitical conflict, in theory, not in the moment it happens, but in the long term, should be a reason that people would buy Bitcoin. Certainly not a reason for them to buy cat with dog face nutsack hat or whatever the fuck these idiots are trading every single day. No offense to all of you. I love you. I'm an idiot too. But, so what it means for the like meme coin casino and coins are 200 down the market cap, I have no idea. But in theory, I don't see why this would wildly affect markets in crypto at all, because people who are passively buying Bitcoin will continue to do so. People who are holding it will continue to do so. And people who are trading altcoins are like an entire different breed and market who are going to be doing that regardless.
So Joe,
Scott, you're starting to sound a bit bitter that you're not into meme coins. You know that someone actually approached me to launch a Scott Melker meme coin.
How to do like
the ultimate FUD of
you can say, Joe, you can say that's me.
You know what's crazy though? I literally got absolutely like attempted evisceration of me last week by a bunch of Bitcoin maxis who thought I was promoting meme coins. But absolutely the most hilarious thing. Like I got canceled once again by the Bitcoin high priests of maximalism. Because for some reason they took an out of context clip of the me meme saying
coin,
that yeah.
The meme coin community considers you the anti meme coin guy, and now you've got
that's
Bitcoin.
That's right, and the Bitcoiners consider me the meme guy because I'm not Bitcoin enough. Well, so I get kicked in one nut by one community and the other nut by the others.
Welcome to my life in politics. Exactly the same thing. But go ahead, Travis.
Yeah, I was just going to say with the meme coin thing, and I'm not going to sit here and like this is not in sort of defense necessarily of the meme coin movement that we're seeing right now, but like the price action on alts over the last couple months, and this was really sort of driven home over the weekend when we hit that kind of bad air pocket when the Israel stuff ramped up, but to me, it seems very clear that there's not even close to enough collective bid in alts right now. And people have been trying to take profit on positions to make room for new stuff that's coming down the pipe, like Egan and Monad. These are like two of the probably the two largest token launches this year. And you have like some meaningful portion of the crypto degen part of this market that just skip alt altogether and they go straight to memes. And you saw it back in February when memes really started heating up and you saw all the air come out of the alt L1 trades like Injective and Sui and Say and Aptos, and everybody was doing these this points to airdrop daisy chain trade on some of these alt L1s. And there wasn't enough money to keep a bid in those names.
That's right.
And also to go fire into meme coins. Because there's just not that much capital. Like yeah. You're not attracting.
It's a washing machine. There's very little new capital in the altcoin market. I'm sure that there is some. You know, people point at market cap, but obviously as the prices go up, that you know we see the a lot of it rise. But if you make, we got to this fever pitch of meme coins, and just to be clear, like if you guys want to trade meme coins, if people want to do that, I think it's amazing. I love casinos. I've said it 100 times. There's nothing more fun to me than going to the craps table and playing and winning or losing with my friends. But I know I'm at a craps table, so my beef with meme coins is that a lot of the people come in have no idea that they're in a casino. It's like you're in a casino and don't know you're there and you don't know you're playing a game. So if you want to trade meme coins or buy lottery tickets or play in the casino, like more power to you. Great. But if you make 1,000 new meme coins in 2 or 3 weeks, there's just not enough money there. So yeah. Eventually there's just too many assets, not enough capital, and they're going to crash. Maybe some will survive. I'm sure there will be some that perform well, But yeah, with very little new money and exponentially increasing assets, there's only one way that can end.
Well, yeah. And then the last thing I'd say too is that, like, in a way, that whole meme coin movement is, it's kind of a fuck you to VCs. Because DGens are, they're basically saying, like, I'm not buying your marked up bag because you can't even pretend to put together a decent enough fake narrative for it to be pseudo believable. So if that narrative isn't even pseudo believable, I might as well buy dog with hat. And honestly, like, in a way, it's actually a pretty smart move. I mean, it's like, it's very nihilistic, but it's kind of smart. And if you rewind back to like summer 2021, with where NFTs really ramped up, that this was sort of one of the more intelligent pitches that I heard for NFTs, was the viewpoint of, let's just stop pretending like alts, like the technology on alts, actually do anything. That, like, that there's actually a product underneath, and just remove that pretending. And that's what NFTs are. And now they're JPEGs with pictures, and you can just trade them. They're just trading instruments.
That's right. And they're NFTs.
Meme coins are just like another extension of that.
Yeah. Like I said, the only, I agree with 100% with what you just said, but it's the DGens who are creating the meme coins who are saying fuck you to the VCs, not your average person who's buying it because they think it's going to make them rich. Right.
Yeah. And I think that most people know that, you know, a lot of meme coins have a ton of manipulation in them. I mean, most meme coins have a lot of manipulation in them. There's the thing, the what is it? A fair fun. What is it? Fun launch dot or launch
pump dot fun.
What is that thing called? Yeah. Yeah. That thing. And it kind of helps with more fair launch type of stuff. There's still a lot of manipulation in it. I think most market participants in meme coins realize that, but they're probably just looking at the lesser of two evils and they're going, eh, I kind of like it over here a little bit better than like buying the marked up VC bags. I just kind of like this setup a little bit better. So I'm just going to kind of spend more time here.
Yeah,
and the lower market cap. So like maybe it's more parlay-ish, right? Like it's more of a,
you can play it with $500. Yeah. You can play with $500. Yeah. Right. But I mean, I don't think that anyone, whether it happens now or happens later or whatever, like those things in all markets, eventually you see flushes. Doesn't mean that it won't continue, it won't whatever, but you just have to, once again, if you're in a casino, just know that you're there. Joe, I would love to hear your take on these meme coins before we get going. You haven't had a chance to speak. Carlos, sorry.
Yeah, thanks for having me up. So I'll just comment quickly on the meme coins, and I want to just talk about overall just sort of where we're at in the markets if we can. But I mean, listen, I love the fact that the meme coins abandon the pretense that, you know, these altcoins are going to do anything at all significant. And to me, I think that's what people crave. They crave honesty. They crave, you know, people just being truthful. And let's just go gamble with some of these tokens and let's just see which ones pop and which ones catch on from a cultural standpoint. So to me, like, you know, although I'm not really personally investing in them, I understand why people are drawn to them. People want just, you know, to people to abandon the nonsense and just say, hey, we're just going to pump some of these things and see if we can get a movement around them and create the next Doge or whatever. So to me, like, you know, I think that's what the consumer is telling you. You're telling you these things are interesting from the standpoint of just, you know, what can rise really quickly and have significant growth and the ability to tap into the zeitgeist of the moment. That's a skill in itself, right? So, you know, people that want to go invest in these and trade them, you know, more power to you. I don't, even as a Bitcoiner, right? I don't prevent people from wanting to gamble with their money. It should be open and honest that they're gambling, right? Like, and I think nobody's confused about the activity, right? So like, I don't.
Okay. If you think nobody's confused, then power to the people.
Yeah, power to the people, right? Like, I don't have any problem with that. I mean, I love the fact that every single one of these things states on, you know, their white paper and website, this has no value, this has no utility whatsoever. And despite the disclaimers, everything the SEC talks about all the time, people still go buy it anyway, right? They want to gamble with their money. And who are the regulators or folks to say that they can't? And also, you know, it is great from a security standpoint. I know there are, you know, it's not really a big thing that doesn't deter any investors that these things might be investment contracts or may not be. But I think it's great from the securities analysis. They just completely take it out, right? When you are issuing a token and you're saying this has no value, this has no roadmap, this has no plan to become anything of utility, and you put that out there in the open space, how can anyone come forward and then say that you're launching some type of investment
contract? But Joe, quickly though, I still, as a lawyer, I would imagine you wouldn't recommend that an American launch one.
No, of course not. But I'm just telling you, you know how difficult that case will be to prove?
Yes.
When you go out in, I mean, just think about it. Like, you know, the SEC faced a tall order and was unable to prove their arguments in Ripple, and they failed in other suits. Think about how much more difficult it becomes when no pretense is advanced that these things have any value. It just makes it that much more challenging on a going forward basis.
I agree. All right. Well, I think we actually covered effectively everything today, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to talk about tomorrow. I mean, Bitcoin still sort of showing some weakness here. I think it was today it topped around 66.8, so almost 67,000, and now right back down to 64.4. So we'll have a lot to talk about, I think, with the markets as we make it through the week. We will be back tomorrow, 10:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you all for joining, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.